Listen on Demand, brought to you by 680 News.
Dan, it is always a pleasure speaking with you. You know, the last time you and I did an interview, we talked about the book, I Am My Father's Son. How does it feel when you think about it now? Because this was at least a year ago or so. In doing the interview, how does it feel that having this book out and that, you know, people connecting with your story?
Well, you know, it really moves me a lot. You know, basically what I am above and beyond anything else is a storyteller. And that, of course, I inherited from my father, who inherited it from his minister grandfather. So I guess my job, like my dad's job, is to tell stories. And whether it's in articles or books or songs, to me, it's sort of part and parcel of the same thing.
Did it surprise you, though, that people took so well to it? I mean, because a lot of people could relate to the stories that you were telling.
I guess so. You know, Rudy, usually whenever I write a song or an article or a book, I just sort of lose myself within the song or the book. And I have no sense of anything but living within those pages or those bars. And I almost don't think about how people are going to respond because it throws me out of the focus. So then when the book came out, I went, oh, my God. You know, and then my book came out. My brother's book, A Book of Negroes, was like just going crazy and winning every award in the world. So once it came out, I started to get a little bit nervous. And then I was very, very humbled, actually, and surprised and deeply moved that people responded to it. But then I figured out we all have father-son stories, you know, regardless of what era, you know, what generation. To me, you know, families tend to go through the same kind of dynamics, you know, so that's when I understood why it resonated, because we all go through this kind of stuff.
You know, but the funny thing is, I was reading a little bit of the info that was sent to me, and, you know, they kind of make reference to, you know, after you wrote this book, you sort of had that itch to do another album. It's like, I don't see you ever having an itch. You just seem to write music whenever.
Well, I think one of the things they say, I don't want to sound, you know, like some kind of a new age guy, but I think one of the tenets to feeling happy, to feeling good about yourself, is to have a sense of purpose. And it doesn't really matter what it is that you're doing, you know. I mean, and, you know, for me to feel healthy and connected to myself and to the world and to the people I love, you know, I need to write. That's it. My life's calling is to live a creative life. So whether I make money at it or not, it is irrelevant. It's just what I was born to do. And if I don't do it, you know, I become unhappy.
You know, you actually answered a question that I was going to ask sometime down the line when we started talking about the new album, Intimate. But I'll ask it anyways, even though you may be answering it again. Does it really matter now when it comes to writing music? Is it about charting or is it about expressing how you feel?
It's about expressing how I feel. You know, I mean, I'm going to be really honest with you, Rudy. I'm never going to sell as many records as Dan Hill, the artist, as I will if I land songs with big stars. You know, so this record, Intimate, was a labor of love. I thought it would be interesting for people to hear how the original writer interprets songs that, say, Backstreet Boys or 98 Degrees happen to have recorded. But my real job, meaning the way I make money, will always be the same. It'll be writing songs for big artists that sell millions of records. So this is something I'm doing just because I simply love to sing, and you know, it was just something I wanted to do.
So how did you go about choosing the songs?
That was hard because I had about 60 covers of songs, and a lot of them were hits. And my producers and myself went around and around and around arguing about what songs to do, and it came down to what felt most natural for me as a human being and as a singer. So, for example, you know, I've written some country hits that, though I love the songs, just didn't seem like they were a natural fit for my voice. So I was just looking for that honest fit. You know, I mean, Britney Spears, I mean, she's, you know, I have nothing but respect for Britney Spears, but, you know, the kind of voice I have, you know, isn't really meant to sing in the style of music that Britney Spears sings.
So what did you find in the collection that we have here? What was the most surprising song that, you know, the way it ended up turning out? And was there one that you would say was most difficult, but you were still able to pull it off?
Well, I think the most surprising ones were the non-love songs. You know, like the song that starts the album is The Human Spark, which I originally wrote with Michael W. Smith for his record. He's a huge Christian multi-platinum artist in the States. And, you know, I was shocked at how much power that, you know, came out in that, in my version of that song, the production, and of course dealing with man's inhumanity, man, which is what the, you know, the subject of the song, and looking for that human spark, meaning the good in all of us. You know, for some reason, you know, as we all know, that is even more relevant today. The other song I was surprised at was After the Skies and Redemption. Again, both songs that aren't love songs, and they deal with two totally different worlds. One, you know, a black person feeling disenfranchised, growing up in Africville, being thrown out of Africville, which to me was sort of like a metaphor for being kicked out of Africa as a slave. And then segging right into Redemption, which is a song about growing up in the Bible Belt in America. And I think what thrilled me the most about this album was the ability to write songs that were no longer had to be just about me. You know, that's where the growth is, that I can address these different human experiences and write about them.
But let me jump in, but you also ended up redoing those Sometimes When We Touch.
Yeah, that wasn't hard at all. You know, it was very emotional because it brought back, because I reunited with the producers that, who were my old friends that produced the original Sometimes When We Touch hit. And also reunited with the piano player who toured with me when I toured with Art Garfunkel in 78. So it was like this very, very emotional, you know, almost like a homecoming, you know, almost like a high school reunion, you know. And so as I sang the song, I was very emotional because it brought back so many memories. But it wasn't hard to sing, you know. None of these songs were hard to sing because I really practiced all these songs an awful lot before I got to Nashville. And the musicians were so great that it just sort of felt like a beautiful get-together of great musicians. And all I was saying is, man, you guys are so good. I just don't want to embarrass myself. I just want to be able to sing as well as you guys play.
For the great thing, too, is, I mean, the album is out, but you're also going to be touring this, too.
Yes. You know, what I really like is the mixing of the stories and the songs. So what I like doing is, say, reading certain sections from my book and then sort of going from the section of my book that, you know, right into a song that comes out of the book. So I'll write in the book about how I wrote I Am My Father's Son and what happened when I played it to my dad. And I'll read that section from the book and then I'll play the song. And I think there's something about just sitting on stage with just a guitar or a piano, especially in this day of hyper-production, that is a little refreshing, because when we grew up, Rudy, you know, the performers that we really love very often could make the music work just with a single instrument. So I thought it'd be fun to kind of do that again.
Is there another step to take with this? I'm surprised nobody has come to you for a, you know, to put this on the small screen or even the big screen.
Well, that's I'm flattered that you would say that. There is a discussion of a documentary in the works, actually, which is sort of in negotiation right now. I've worked very closely with Paul Corrington, the wonderful author who wrote Whale Music, who just died of lung cancer. And, you know, I was very busy sort of working with him on his movie, which is going to be coming out in a few months, and writing for that. So I guess now hopefully they'll be able to get this movie together on, you know, my life's work.
This will be fantastic. Look, if you need a reporter in that movie, you know who to call.
Yeah, I want you to play my brother, because he's too busy.
No problem there, my friend. Now, as we speak, next week you're going to be at the ROM?
Yes, the 23rd, with Joe Seeley.
And this will be, like you just mentioned, this is going to be the kind of show that folks are going to get a chance to see?
Yeah, well, you know, this is what I mentioned this in this article I wrote for Sway Magazine that will be coming out soon. I want this to be a celebration of black role models. You know, that I grew up at a time when the black role models were unbelievable. You know, I grew up in a, you know, where the scattering of black families in the 60s were so uber competitive and so driven. If you didn't get A's, your father, you know, gave you a whooping. And, you know, I want to celebrate, because a lot of the songs I've written, you know, in honor of our fathers. I wrote Railway Porter song about Joe Seeley and Oscar Peterson's father, who were railway porters, or Africville is about Joe Seeley's father, or, you know, I Am My Father's Son, obviously, about my father. So you know, I want this in a sense to be a celebration of our black role models now, you know, because they're out there. Hayden Neal was a terrific role model. Julie Black is a great role model. Joel Seeley has just been awarded the Order of Canada. And I think it was one of my responsibilities to let people know that there are these wonderful role models out there, just like my dad had role models in, say, Langston Hughes or James Baldwin. You know, I believe that the generation, you know, coming up after us need to see, you know, role models in order to feel, you know, that there's hope and inspiration.
Well, my friend, I'm looking forward to the show. Website so we can check up on you and wherever else you're going to be performing.
I'm sorry, my website?
Website, yeah.
www.danhill.com.
Fantastic. Dan, always good speaking to you, my friend. Congratulations on the new album.
Thank you, Rudy.
I think, personally, I think this is a really bold approach for you to take in, you know, in re-singing these songs the way you have. It's, you know, you bring out a fresh vibe to it, and it just shows, again, once again, the versatility of Dan Hill.
Well, I, you know, all I can say is that it was a musical high point of my life, just singing with these musicians. And I think that's what it all comes down to with all of us, is we, you know, we just have to kind of grab the passion and live it.
Absolutely.
My friend, you take care of yourself.
And you too, Rudy.
And we'll keep in touch.
I hope so.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.